Blog Talk Radio.
What Tom Brady said, he felt it in the air. Yeah, that thing that they call suspension, right?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Sports Lounge. This is Sports Lounge. I'm your host, Magic, the Magician, Marlon, of course, Marlon the Magician, and of course my man Lou Matic on the ones and twos. Here we go, bringing it to you live, the Sports Lounge Final Verdict, name of the episode. So much to talk about, so much to get into as normal because, hey, this is sports and athletics. It's always a new story every day. And I tell you, when we left off last time, Lou, we was talking about this very instance of what took place a couple of days ago. Of course, as you know, the NFL came down with their verdict, right? They then went ahead and gave Tom Brady a 4-game suspension, gave the Pats $1 million fine. They lost the first round next year and the fourth round the following year. It's just looking ugly over there.
Nah, it's looking right as far as I'm concerned.
You know what? And I got to say the same thing because it's pretty obvious to the fact of what went down here. It's just a matter of, okay, are you going to admit it? Are you going to tell the truth about it? Or are we going to sit here and just go over semantics? And the reality is, you know, you'd have to be a fool to sit here and believe that he did not know what was going on. So,
yeah.
Obviously, you know, this comes out because, hey, listen, reality is, and look, coach runs the team. Everything that Belichick, especially that organization called the Patriots, everybody has full disclosure, starting with the head coach and further and so on. And the reality is, you know, of course, you know, it being a situation dealing with equipment, I don't think or I would doubt that, you know, that Belichick had the details on specifically what happened, right? We know specifically, we probably didn't know to what degree the balls were being deflated, but we're not foolish enough to say that he doesn't know that Tom Brady likes his balls, his footballs, that is, deflated to a certain level. I'm pretty sure he had some understanding of that, but I'm sure he probably thought that it was still within the legal limit. Thing is here is that Tom Brady knew the truth, and he wasted time. He did not come to the defense of himself. He sat back, he played as if everybody was crazy and he didn't know what was going on, and this is what happened. This is what happened. And he sat back and basically got the hammer brought down on him. So,
yeah.
It's crazy that this would be the situation that he would be faced with. But it is. It is. It's definitely been brought to his attention that he will be suspended 4 games max. Now, what will happen? More than likely, he'll go to appeals, get his lawyer team, and say some of that stuff is circumstantial evidence, you know, that, hey, it's not totally right. You know, it's not correct in the situation. So, we'll figure this thing out, and maybe so. You know what I mean? But, you know, come on. It's like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? So they have to figure this thing They're going to have to come to a certain level of understanding on what they're doing. They're going to have to come to an agreement to say, okay, listen, Tom, we got this. Look, did you hear, I forgot the guy that did the report, Ted Wells. And I heard him come on, you know, I think it was Mike and Mike, and he was basically defending his position on his investigation, which I don't blame him for. It's just like anything else. He did what Tom Brady should have did, right? Somebody accuses you of something, you come to your defense and say, wait a minute. No, this is what happened. I went to him. His lawyer was right there. His lawyer could have went, looked through the phone and got the messages, and he could have decided what messages were pertinent, and then I would have looked, because guarantee you, this is what's going to kill him, right, Lou? Because we already know what that happened. See, that employee, that ball boy that deflated all the balls, what happened is they done already got his phone. See, they done already seen the messages. This is just the part they're just not seeing, right? So yep. They're waiting on Tom Brady to say whether or not, hey, now let's see yours and see if you're going to be truthful about what you would say, because we already got the messages. We got them. They're right here. And see, that's the part that he's trying to figure out and trying to work out. What is he going to say to nullify what was already sent to this guy? Because what are you going to say? He won't even let them get the phone. So what are you going to say to somebody else to try to get the phone?
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? And in other words, you're not letting the Ted Wells report or the investigators see the phone. So how are you going to get out of the situation if you say somebody else has the phone? Or it wasn't you that sent the text messages, it was somebody else. That's not going to hold water. You ain't even let this another person get the phone. So it's you. You sent those messages. The guy has it on his phone. You better believe he gave them everything they needed, because he's trying to work in the NFL sometime in some shape, form, or fashion. Because basically, you know how this thing goes. He's a low guy on a totem pole, and basically he's getting thrown to the wolves, right? We know that, right, Lou? He's basically in the furnace, and they know he's taking the bullet because he was doing exactly how he was instructed. So some other team around the league is going to turn around and give him an opportunity. So in order for that to happen, he had to say, hey, I got to divulge the information. I'm not going to hide it from you. I'm going to give you everything you need. We know that. But see, Tom Brady, he also knows that. His lawyer knows that. But, of course, they're going to say this stuff to back off the Wolves. You know, I've been watching the sports show pretty much early this morning. I saw First Take. I listened to Mike and Mike. And, you know, I hear, you know, normally, listen, I love Stephen A. Smith and I love Skip Bayless. But I tell you what, Skip Bayless, man, this guy, man, you know, he just, I tell you, it's like when he falls in love with somebody, you got to watch out, man, because he will go to the ends of the earth to try to testify to something that is absolutely foolish. You know, it's really crazy to me what he's saying. It's like you can love somebody, you can like somebody, but listen, be truthful up front about the situation. Oh, well, you know, are we sure that Tom Brady did this? Or we're not sure that that's what happened. And, you know, the investigation, certain things don't look right. It looks like they used a different type of gauge to put air into the footballs. Come on. Would you stop it? We didn't need an investigation to know what's going on with that situation.
Skip,
we didn't need
an
investigation.
Another...
Lou, did you need an investigation?
Hell no.
You didn't, bro, as soon as you heard it, you knew what time it was. Tell the truth. I mean, we all, listen, if we played any kind of athletics, Lou, we've had every ball imaginable, right? We've had baseball. We know that's all leather and tough leather and rope, so that's going to wear right over time. But we've had basketball. We've had football. And you telling me by playing basketball, you don't know when air is low on that basketball? You have an idea, because if we're playing with it all the time, and it has a certain bounce, a certain texture, we know something's wrong with it, right? We know if somebody done dropped it in some water, if somebody done put some shoe shine on it, right? If it's a little bit deflated, we know these things because we're playing with it all the time. You're a professional football player. You're a quarterback. You touch the ball more than anybody else. So you're going to tell me that you ain't going to know the difference, or you didn't have anything to do with those balls being deflated. Like they just up and did that stuff on their own. Like, which equipment manager is going, or equipment person is going to take that upon themselves to do? We know none of them going to do that. Not a one, right? So we know they had a relationship. The text messages, I'm sure, they have from the other guy, and to, for insurance or for reassurance, we both know that this is the case. We know that he had a conversation. We know that he received text messages, and he was aware. All he had to do in the first place was just come up to the forefront and say, hey, you know what? I don't know how much they deflated them footballs, but I like mine a little bit on the low side. Always, I want it within regulation. I don't want it to be illegal, but I do like it a little bit on the low side. That's all he had to say.
Yep.
He could have did that right after the Super Bowl, and he would have been straight. Or, you know, and I say after the Super Bowl. See, because, look, I'm smart, Lou, and you smart. Why take the risk of being suspended for the Super Bowl, right? You just got suspended for 4 games. You could have possibly got suspended for the Super Bowl if you're not careful, right? Because it's 2 weeks leading to the Super Bowl after the conference championship. So I wouldn't have said nothing until after the Super Bowl, which is basically what the NFL did anyway, right? I don't know why it took this long to get an investigation on deflated footballs. Now, is it the end of the world? Is it somewhat severe? That's another topic, and we'll get to that. But, Lou, I want to hear your insight on it and what you think so far before I get into that.
This whole situation been avoided. We wouldn't be talking about it to this point if you just came out and admit to some degree about how you like your equipment. It's that simple. But you chose not to do that. So therefore, now you have a situation to where, okay, now you're suspended. Now you got the equipment people, they're done. They're out of a job now. And on top of that, now we got more future issues that could happen, because what's going to happen when the season starts with, you know, your teammates? Because you've been doing this behind everybody. You know, like we said that Bill Belichick, you know, he asked Tom Brady about the situation. You know, Tom Brady's denying. You know, Belichick could have some sort of idea that this is going on, but he's not involved in the situation. So this is all on Tom Brady. So now you got a trust issue now. They can sit there and act like, oh, it's going to be all, it's going to be right. No, it's not, because it's going to be a trust issue now with the coach. Ownership, too, as much as ownership wants to deny it, I don't believe that. And even worse, with your teammates. So now you got mostly the biggest problem is going to be trust issue with your teammates now.
Yeah. That, you know, I don't know about that. You know what, Lou? It's almost like, okay, this is what I think was going on with the teammates. I think it's more or less of a situation, okay, there's a loyalty there. You understand what I mean? Like, okay, that's my boy, this is my team. We all know what happened. They knew what was going on from the very beginning. They knew he had, you know, complete understanding of what happened. But see, what they're going to do, they're going to support their guy. They're going to be loyal to him. So I don't think, you know, it's going to affect the teammates in a way. Maybe the former players that are outside of the game, and even some of them, I've already heard Teddy Bruschi and some of these former Patriots, and they're backing Tom Brady. So I expect them to go ahead and back Tom Brady, because you understand what I'm saying? This is our quarterback. He's a Patriot, and I get it. I understand and I get it. It's not going to be any objectivity when it comes to that. This is my problem.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Yeah, but see, that's also an issue there in itself as well. The same thing we talked about the last show, blind loyalty. It's like, okay, he's a quarterback, we're going to back him, but this is the same type of thing and the same type of mentality that he has, that pretty much in the NFL itself does this to their players, especially the well-talented players, whether it's the quarterback like Tom Brady or, you know, wide receivers or anybody. Anytime they get in trouble with something, or they think they might get in trouble with something, they know off the jump, everything's going to be okay because I'm one of the most talented players in the league. So I'm basically
going to get a slap on the wrist at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know what? And I see that happening, bro. But see, I'm gonna tell you, this is why it's like that though. Because see, it starts from the top. You see that, Lou? It really starts from Belichick, and he has created this culture to where everybody is loyal to him and that Patriot logo. That's basically what it is. And we know who, you know, Tom Brady's right hand, or we know who, actually, I should say, Bill Belichick's right hand man is. We know it's Tom Brady. Him and Tom is like they, of course, when Tom gets older, that's going to change. But as for right now, we know that both of them are like thick as thieves. They're going to be definitely loyal to one another in that organization.
Another Kraft,
so,
too.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. He's still trying to figure out or trying to fight the situation or the circumstance. And I don't know how that's going to work out for him. I don't know how that's going to work out for him, because I think you have to, how do you say, you have to be to a certain degree true to the facts. You can't be oblivious to what's going on. You can't be blindsided. But, you know, let me stop talking like I'm a fool. Everybody knows the truth. Everybody knows what's going on. Nobody's fooling anybody here. They all know what the truth is. They know what this guy had did. They know what he was guilty of. They basically are saying, listen, no matter what y'all evidence y'all have, we're going to stick together over here. And the truth is, you don't have enough information to go give us this heavy of a penalty. Now, was it severe? See, this is what I have a problem with. It was severe, Lou, and this is why I think I have a problem with the severity of it. See, what people tend to do and what the NFL is doing is that now – you giving a punishment based on what the environment is for you. So you get what I'm saying? Oh, you messed up on Ray Rice situation. You messed up on such and such suspension. Oh, we didn't really get him enough for Spygate. So since you try to do all of that, and since you try to embarrass us, oh, we're gonna really put the hammer down on you just to show you our point. You know what I mean? It's almost like just be balanced. But see, on the other hand, I gotta say, I got to accept what they gave and what they did. You understand what I'm saying? I got to expect that, and I got to respect it, because it's like you know that they're going to take this to appeal, and you know some of these fines or some of these issues are going to get cut down just a slight bit. I suspect just a suspension. I mean, you know, four games might be two now. I mean, you don't really have enough evidence to say he got to have four. So that's going to get cut in half. I expect that to get cut in half, and they're going to do that. But as far as the rest of the stuff, oh, they're going to tag that organization. Y'all going to catch this one, and you're going to catch that other situation with them draft picks. You're going to lose all of that. That's, you might as well go ahead and, you know, spit in the wind. That's going to just fly right back in your face. You know what I mean? There's no way out on that one. So that's what I suspect is going to happen.
The suspension – the four-game suspension, I pretty much from the jump, I expected it to be that much. And some people might say it's severe. I say I don't think it's severe, especially when you're dealing with a repeat offender. And especially the first time they got in trouble for something beforehand, they were caught from day one, and they were just let off with a warning and say, okay, don't do this again. And they go and they continue to do what they got caught for. And now here you are again in trouble with something else. So, yeah, you gotta put the shackles on them.
You know, and this is what I want people to realize. Lou is a Boston fan. He is a Boston, Massachusetts, New England fan. He was born in Boston. And he is saying this about his team. See, we were talking about that blind loyalty. Here's a true fan who is loyal to the truth. He loves his team. He is a Patriot fan, but wrong is wrong and right is right. Am I right, my man? That's what it is. We're going to be honest. We're going to be fair. We're going to be balanced. And that's the truth of the matter. And everybody that's really – that has played professional football or that's in the league, they know the truth. They know it. And basically all it is right now is just, okay, he's just trying to, you know, do this. Now, they also mentioned, hey, Lou, that – his legacy would be ruined. And I don't agree with that. I mean, especially in this day and age. You know why I say that, Lou? It would have been ruined if it was our time. when we came up where your reputation meant something. Like, you know, if you did something, it'll follow you through your whole career. That's not going to follow through with this new generation. I mean, you got all kinds of people doing all kinds of things that are way worse who've been forgiven for the things they've done. So this is really a microwave society. Right now it's a hot topic about, I don't know, probably next season, probably going to his next Super Bowl. It's going to be a dead issue. Nobody's even going to care anymore at that particular point. You know what I mean? So that's how I see it. I mean.
It's a done deal. This issue, it really isn't that big of a deal, but they actually purposely wanted to make it a big deal because this situation, this investigation really went on way too long. This could have been resolved way back, you know, like a week after the Super Bowl. But they picked this current time to bring everything out and, you know, make a big news story about it because they want to keep the NFL at the top and want to keep people talking about it, especially when there's no football going on now. Because you got the playoffs going on, you got some Game 7 excitement going on in hockey. So they picked the time now, okay, let's bring the NFL in fold, let everybody forget about these other things that's going on for the minute. And then it's going to go away for a little bit up until the season starts, you know, training camp and all of that. Then they're going to talk about it for, you know, a couple of games, you know, with the Patriots, and then that's going to be the end of it.
Yeah. And then I'm with you. That's what I see, Luke. I see the exact same thing. I think for the start of the season, when Brady actually comes back, it's going to be a topic. And then when they start winning again, you know, once they got to get like, and let me tell you something, they're going to win some games with this Garoppolo, this other quarterback. This other quarterback's going to win one out of those two games that Brady is suspended for. So, you know, that's not going to fool me at all. So, that's primarily what I suspect. But when he comes back, it's going to be a topic of conversation for that week. And then when he starts to get on that roll and they start winning 3 out of 4 or 5 out of 6 games, it'll be all forgotten then. It's going to be done. Nobody's going to care. Everybody's going to be deep engulfed into the season. So, you know, hey, that's what I see. I don't see nothing other than that or outside of that. That's primarily what I see. And, you know, like I said, you know, these guys, you got to be, you know, God gave you common sense. You got to use it. Come on, man. You're not fooling anybody. We know what happened. This is what happened. And, you know, I heard, you know, Jonathan Vilma giving great advice, and I get it. He's trying to, you know, he got to understand the difference between him and Brady was that Vilma was actually innocent of the situation that they was accusing him of. He wasn't going out there putting bounties on players. He was just playing physical football. Whereas Tom Brady, the issue is whether he knew the balls were deflated. That's the issue. So he's not innocent in this situation. And I don't believe it for a minute. And listen, I'm a Tom Brady fan. You're not going to find, well, you might find other ones, but I'm talking about as far. Yeah. I'm a big Tom Brady supporter. To me, he is the best quarterback in the game. Although physically I would take Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, if it was the last game and I needed a guy to win me that game, I'm taking Brady all day without hesitation. I mean, that's my personal. But, you know how these guys do. That's how they do. You know, they're very unobjective. And, you know, they basically love who they love, and that's how that's going to roll. So, sad to say, but that's the truth. But, anyway, I guess we could slide right along into some of this NBA playoffs. Of course, some of the games that happened last night, and then, of course, some of the games that are on today. Man, people are saying they want to see some superstars in the game, and, you know, they missed Kobe, they missed that. Listen, this is a good playoff. I don't care what anybody said. Say what they want to say. These are some really good competitive games. The one that is close to the least competitive would be the Clippers in Houston. But every other game has been right. It's been balanced off, head-to-head, pretty tight game. And I suspect we'll have a few game sevens, and I will speak on that in a second. But, Lou, going back, looking at what happened last night, we had the Wizards and we had Atlanta, and then we had in the other game, we had Memphis and Golden State.
Yeah.
And, of course, Golden State looked like they're back on it again. It looked like they just needed an eye-opening situation to realize that, hey, we can't lay down because if we do, these guys will put us out of commission. And, of course, as you know, Conley is not 100%. And I know that I think Allen got injured, didn't he? So it's like,
yeah, he injured his hamstring and he wasn't in the game. So there goes their defense.
I mean, and that defense is still solid. It's just not as good as it needs to be. So that's being realistic. That's going to happen. And boy, he's going to have to come out for this next game because they need him. I mean, they don't have a chance without him. They need him. And
they need him.
And I gotta say, go ahead.
Now they need him, and Golden State got exactly what I expected for him to do, even the past two games. And that is Iguodala coming off the bench big time for him, and that's what he did. So that pretty much makes Golden State like a more tougher. But when you don't have Tony Allen in there for the backcourt and you have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson back there, you know, Conley can't do it by himself. And, of course, we have Iguodala stepping it up. But last night's game, he had 16 off the bench. You know, you can't beat him because when you don't have that backcourt, you know, to lock him down, they pretty much can't play their game, their slow down, grind out game. So they have to play a scoring game. And I heard the coach before that game saying that we're going to have to start playing a little more offensive, you know, against the team. We're going to have to score like 100 points, you know, to win. But you don't really need to. But in this series, when you have guys that go out, like when Conley was out for a bit and when Tony Allen is out, yeah, you're going to need more scoring in. Especially for guys like Jeff Green, Vince Carter, they have to step up for him for that to happen.
Yeah, he's going to have to step up and maybe get some of that old Vince, that guy that can put up 15 to 20 points. He's going to have to be that guy. And be a little bit more aggressive with what he can do because he can have it. He could definitely have it. You know, that guy, he's to me, that the untapped potential of what he can do and where he should be in history in itself. So it's like at any moment, if he just gets a glimpse of who that guy is, you will see a guy that will revitalize this team until, you know, Tony Allen, I don't know if he can get 100%, but he can get enough to where he can actually contribute to that team. So I look at it, it's just like you said, Lou. You have to have pressure on those guys. You got to play aggressive. You got to trap those guys, force. And I don't see them as aggressive without them, and that's all they're doing. Iguodala. Every once in a while, you have these, you know, Jamal Crawford's one, Ginobili used to be like that, Vinny the Microwave. You know, you have those guys that just come off the bench and just kill you. J.R. Smith, same way. These guys that can really be starters, but they're now put into a backup role, but they're dangerous and they're potent. That's exactly the same bracket that Iguodala sits in. That guy's that dangerous. You can't allow him to damage that, and that's what he's doing. It's taking full advantage of it. So, and when they do that, that's a hard team to beat. But I tell you, in my opinion, and I said this earlier, remember, Lou, I said, man, the best team in the West is going to be the team that wins between the San Antonio Spurs and the L.A. Clippers. And the Clippers won. So, bro, in my opinion, I think the Clippers right now are playing the best basketball. Now, saying that, Golden State is still pretty good as well, which means I think that series is going to go to 7. But I'm just picking the Clippers. That's all. They're both on the West Coast. It's not over yet. I think Houston will be done tonight. They're in L.A. I doubt that, you know, they're going to be in Staples, and I doubt that, you know, Chris Paul and any of those guys want to extend it far past what it already is. So I expect that to be done tonight. But, you know, looking at what we saw yesterday between this Golden State team, when they play like that, they're a tough team to beat. I don't know, you know, they could beat anybody with that roster. So I give credit where credit's due. They needed an eye-opener. They needed to step up. They was down 2-1. Steph Curry didn't want to talk to nobody. They came in the next game, and they was back on it. And people forget how good they are really defensively. They're a pretty good defensive team, too.
Yeah.
They shut teams down. So, you know, that's typically what I'm seeing. And the other game, which was the real exciting one, in my opinion, and it was low scoring and defensive, was the Washington Wizards at Atlanta. And, of course, Al Horford, I always have a hard time saying his name or pronouncing his name, snatched the ball away. Yeah, snatched the ball away from the knee as he was slipping and hit the game winner. But before that, it was that man, the truth, in the corner there, the big-time three. That guy, let me tell you something. They look like a completely different team with Wall in that lineup. And that's why I'm going to stick with my prediction. I think they're going to beat Atlanta in 7 games. That's what I see. I see them beating them in 7 games. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, the Wizards are definitely the better team when they have Wall in there. I mean, Wall, even with his injury, he still played a solid game. He played a solid game. He still could get to the lane whatever you want. You know, 15, not as much scoring, but as expected, because he's pretty much playing one-handed, but he still put up a great effort out there. It's just at the end of the game, they just had an unfortunate situation. Nene was there. He was boxing out Millsap, but Millsap tripped over somebody else's foot, and at the same time when Nene's trying to feel him out for the box out, he falls as well, and Horford was just right there to get the ball. So no one did nothing wrong in that situation as far as the Wizards. It's just an unfortunate situation that happened that led to the Hawks getting the win.
Yeah, and you know, and I got to give him credit, Lou, because let me tell you, that Horford, man, he fights, man. Don't he? People forget.
Yeah.
You know, that guy was with Noah. They have that, you know, everybody that was on that Florida team, even Corey Brewer, and I know the other two didn't quite make it in the NBA. They had a way of aggressiveness and hustle about them, the way they played. I think they was one of the best defensive teams in collegiate basketball history. You know, they would literally out-hustle everybody. And defensively, they were a terror. And, you know, Horford, man, very underrated, man. That guy's like an all-star that you rarely ever mention, right? And he's really good. He's really good. He might be the best out of that group, to be quite honest with you. And he fights, man. He fights.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely the best player on that team. He's been an all-star, I think, like 2 times out of his career. So he is the glue for that team. And, of course, you got Jeff Teague, who I think he is the second best player on the team, and when you're getting a solid play out of him, you know, they're still a tough team to beat. But, you know, with John Wall coming back defensively, you know, they can lock down Atlanta. And you see that towards the end of the game, they did play great on defense. John Wall, you know, he stopped Schroeder. He played up on Schroeder, and when Schroeder started to make his move, he actually gave space to Schroeder and allowed him to get into the position where he was, you know, for the layup, because John Wall is taller and longer than him, and he got a clean block off the backboard. But unfortunately, everybody was tumbling in the paint, fighting for position, and Horford was right there to get the ball.
And he just tumble. I mean, it was natural for that to happen, you know, because it was just a crowded section, and one guy tumbled like dominoes, right? Everybody kind of just fell, and the ball just kind of went in his direction. He was able to seize control of it and put it back up for 1/8 of a second, and that won.
Yeah,
so, you know,
that's how That's how Horford's efforts been the whole game. He's had like six, he had 11 rebounds total, six of them offensive. So he was there offensively getting the board. So kind of pretty much how it was going to work out anyway.
Yeah, that's basically the routine, right? It all worked out, and it was good. It was very entertaining to see, and that was a great game. But now that they're back, I expect to see that. I expect to see, like, you know, the Wizards take the next two games. I think they're going to beat them in Washington, and if it comes down for one game for the rest of the season, that's what I expect to see.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much was a wrap-up from yesterday. You know, I heard, I got a friend that's a Wizards fan. He's from D.C., and he's almost ready to hang himself. And I told him, hey, man, slow down. Stop getting emotional, you know what I mean?
Oh, boy.
Slow down. It's not over yet. I said, trust me, I think they'll go to Washington and win that game, and it's a game seven deciding game. Who do you got, Pierce? I got Pierce.
Ooh.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
So what I've seen, of course.
Yeah.
We got the games that are on today, and the one that's presently being played just ended the first quarter. Cleveland's up on Chicago 32-31. You remember last week, Lou, how when Derrick Rose hit that game-winning shot and it was up 2-1, and everybody was on Roses and the Bulls and said, hey, they can close it out. Let me tell you, see, that's why I told people, just wait. Stop rushing. It's going to come to us. It's going to reveal itself. In the end, you're not going to really, you know, take the emotion away from what you're saying. You're jumping for joy out of emotion, but you're not looking at the facts. And the reality is, the Bulls blew this series a long time ago. They blew it in game two. That's where they blew it, because they had an opportunity with J.R. Smith injured, you know, Kevin Love being out, a struggling LeBron James, to put their foot on their neck and win that second game in Cleveland. That opportunity to seize control of that series, and they did not do it. They didn't do it. And even when they hit that game, you know, that game-winning buzzer beater, they should have lost that game. So, listen, I'm not surprised by what transpired. In fact, I expect the Bulls to lose tonight. I said they were losing six games. And even if it goes to seven, they're going to lose game seven. So, for me, Tom Thibodeau will be gone from Chicago, and it'll be the end for them. Rose will never get an opportunity because he's Rose. Now, this is what I will say, is that I like the effort and tenacity that he played with this year versus what he's done the past 3 years. Does it make up for everything? Of course not. It does. Not a chance. But I can give him credit where credit is due. Even though he missed his last 11 shots a couple of days ago, I like the effort. I like the way they play. And he's playing hard, and he's playing with a mentality that he should have been playing with. And he wasn't playing with that mentality early on. And I'm not saying necessarily in games. I mean as far as towards playing the game. Because before, if you're talking about retirement, if you're up here taking the rest of the season off minor surgery, you know what I mean, for a meniscus, and your team needed you in the playoffs, that Bulls team that could have made the playoffs a few years ago, that did make the playoffs, remember they had a really good record, and they got out of the first round, that Bulls team, they could have did something a little bit pretty special had they just even had his presence on the court. But he basically was done and leaving people in the balance saying, well, you know, I might come back, might not come back. See, he had the wrong mentality. That's what I mean as far as attitude towards the game. When he adjusted that this season, when he realized, hey, man, you really under a lot of pressure, you got to show up. Guess what happened? Now he's playing better. But nevertheless, Lou, he is held to the highest level of superstar. I mean, you can't miss your last 11 shots, especially in the second half. You need to make your last 11. It's good when you miss your first 11, right? When you're cold early, that's fine, because in clutch time, when we can depend on you, that's when you're most vital and that's when you're necessary the most. So when you ask me, where does Derrick Rose rank as far as like the top 10 athletes, or not athletes, but top 10 basketball players in the game today? I don't think he cracks my top 10. I'm sorry, but I'm just being honest. I have to be able to depend on my players. And he made the game winner on Friday, so that's good. But, I mean, you cannot afford to miss 11 straight shots in the second half, late third, early fourth quarter. You can't do it. You just can't.
No. No, you definitely can't. You know, him and, you know, a couple other guys on the team can't. Yeah, you can't be, you know, even when you're struggling like that, you got to do other things as well. You know, when you're struggling with shooting, okay, do something else, and maybe the shot could start coming back later. So, but he has been playing a lot better, you know, a lot more effort and, you know, playing hard. So that actually makes up for, you know, even though you're missing shots, you're playing hard, a lot of other things that you do in a game actually makes up for it. So I'll give him credit for that. Now, as far as far as the end of the game itself, you know, it really puts a real salt on the wound when you are playing hard, your team is playing hard, and you lose not really because of your effort. You lose because of other things that happen in the game that don't really deal with anybody that's on the court playing. You're dealing with the people that don't touch the basketball at all. And I'm talking about the damn referees.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We have this thing that's called a replay center in the NBA. You can look at the replays from every possible angle in the arena. Every single camera that's there at the arena, whether it's a camera that they use for the crowd or when they're coming back from commercials, showing everybody cheering, the basic television camera that you see through most of the game, the camera that's up on the scoreboard looking down center court, cameras above the basket, cameras by the coaches, baseline, every camera that's there, they use. You have a situation in the game where Devla Dedova for Cleveland. He's on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, him and Taj Gibson, you know, they tumble going for a rebound. Okay, foul is called. He's on the ground. Taj is on top of him. Taj gets up. This guy literally locks his legs around Taj's ankle. And Taj kicks his leg free. He wasn't kicking him. He was trying to kick his legs free. And the refs go and look at the replay. They actually did go look at the replay of the situation. And they rule it as an ejection. Taj Gibson gets an ejection. The other guy gets nothing. How does that make sense? How do you literally sit there, look at a replay, and say he was at fault? That doesn't make no sense. And the Bulls were playing well during that time. The lineup, they went to a smaller lineup. And, you know, Gibson was playing great for them at that point. They were actually, the tempo was more in their favor during the game. And that stupidness right there pretty much ended the game for them. And then come later on the day after, the NBA, you know, reviews what was going on. Reviewing the same thing that the referees are using this new technology to make the call, and they give the other guy a technical foul, which is what should have been happening in the first place, because he's antagonizing a situation. He's starting a problem. So Taj Gibson should have never got ejected to begin with. So I don't understand how you have the NBA themselves that's reviewing the same thing the referees were reviewing at the time. But for some reason, these three guys can't get that simple situation right.
I'm glad you brought this up, because primarily, see, but listen, the refs messed it up. But see, you know what, Taj Gibson, you messed it up too, because no matter what happens, you're in a crucial position to win the game. Don't give anybody an opportunity to take that away. And that's what he did. You can't get allow certain things to be, you know, to frustrate you. You know what I mean? You can't allow that to happen. I'm sorry, I got had to answer that something on there. Okay, I'm sorry, Lou, but I'm back again. Got distracted. Okay, but back. Yeah, I'm screwing up here. Oh, look like Lou. Technical difficulties got him as well. But anyway, it looked like Lou got technical difficulties. It looked like he got dropped out real quick. But I'll go ahead and continue. But naturally, like I said, you're in a crucial situation. You're down by a few points. You have an opportunity. You're making a run, and then here you go. You make a boneheaded play. You can't do that. No matter what happens in the game, you have to be cognizant of the scenario. You cannot allow yourself to get that kind of foul during that type of situation. And right now, your team is down 3-2. And I think tonight is going to be the end of it. And we'll see. I mean, they're trying to make a run. They're trying to make it tough. But they're still down by 1 point, going back and forth. So it's going to be the same type of game. So that's primarily what happened with that. But we also needed to get into the other game, which is tonight, which would be the Clippers and the Houston Rockets. I expect that to be done. You're not going to beat them in the Staples Center. I think they're going to come in there pumped up. They kind of laid off the last game in Houston. I think Houston wanted it more, and they found a way to win, but I don't think it's enough. I expect Chris Paul and the boys and Doc Rivers to go ahead and advance. There goes Lou coming back in. Yeah. Good job, good job. But I expect the Clippers to go ahead and run away with this. And take that series and be prepared to face off against the winner of Memphis and Golden State, which I suspect to be Golden State. What about you, Lou?
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. I mean, Houston, yeah, they won last night, but I doubt they're going to be able to pull it off, you know, winning in this, like, the 7-game series, and they have to win, like, 3 games in a row. They won the last game, but I don't know. They might win this one, but Clippers got it. Because even that last game they won, this is like that was the first time Houston actually played the way they were supposed to play this whole series. So I really don't have much faith in them.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, they put up a good fight in game 5, but I think it's a wrap. I think it's done. And it'll be over. So, the Jeepers Creepers, Losers Weepers, however you want to call it. I know I just said that wrong, but who cares? It's not gonna be
right.
A positive thing for them. I did Losers
yep.
Sweepers. Okay.
Losers Weepers.
Yeah. So that's primarily what I say. Now, Lou, we did want to get into this for the final topic of the day, and that's the NBA. What they call like the combine for the NBA.
Ugh.
And
the thing I hate most in sports on any professional is the combine.
Any combine, right? NBA or NFL,
yeah.
Just any combine. Because you know what I realized? See, like, you know, in the NFL, it is publicized. Like, the combine is really an important thing. They try to play it off like it's not. They try to say, oh, well, you know, the top guys, they have their situation solidified, and people that's in the top 10 have their situation solidified. No, they don't. They don't, because if they have a bad combine, they drop down in the draft. See, it affects their stock. So it matters more in the NFL. But in the NBA, as Lou was bringing to my attention, because I remember watching this probably about a good, you know, 7-8 years ago. Then I didn't see it again. Lou brought up to my attention that, hey, this comes on still. And what they do, they don't promote it, number one, don't promote it well, and number two, it's actually three parts of this. They play it during the day. Like if you're working, you can't catch it. And number three, that's not really for the premier player. It's not for your top 10 or your top 12 draft. It's for the other guys that are on the fringe of making it. That's
not this year.
And
it's over the years, it's been like that, you know. But this year, I don't know. But for some reason, I didn't see a lot of the top prospects that pretty much are guaranteed, like top 15 for the first round. I've seen a lot of guys pretty much that I've never seen before. A lot of the guys I've seen there, I've seen them before. A lot of, juniors and seniors in there, but it's mainly for the guys that's trying to get a spot, it's basically like a development for players in the draft. And even this year, this is something that they haven't done over the years since like the early 2000s, because back then when they had the combine, you do the defensive drills, you do the sprint, the vertical and all of that. And also what you do, you have a scrimmage, a few times during the combine, you have the players get on there and they go 5-on-5. For the longest time after, I think, like 2001, 2002, 2003, or somewhere there, from that point up until this point, they didn't do any scrimmaging. They just X'd that out, no 5-on-5 scrimmaging. Now they brought that back, but it's like this year's combine, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, I've seen a couple of players, that I have my eye on, especially one from Notre Dame, but it's like, what are you guys really trying to accomplish here now? And I don't see any benefit from this combine now, and especially when you have owners that's in the league now and want to use this whole new analytics crap. So it's like, you want to do that, then what's the point of even having these players working out, showing the public, what they can do, what they possibly need to improve and all that, when you're really not going to take that into account anyway?
You know what? They're taking it into account a different way, Luke. They're breaking it down so, like, now we're going to give analytics on the player specifically. If he jumps a certain height, he can work this way in our offense. You see, and I know they have those NBA scouts there looking at all the measurables and saying, hey, we need a guy that can jump this high, who has arm length this long, who can play in this kind of system. We can get this guy in a later round, and that'll be great for an addition for our team. And that's how they're placing them. Based off, if it was up to analytics, your players that would go undrafted, right, or that would make a late draft, would have no opportunity to be better than what they're actually projected at. And that's the things I don't like about analytics, whether it's any sport, whether it be baseball, football, or anything else. It's like Tom Brady, where would he fit on an analytics scale? He was a sixth rounder. You saw his combine. Everybody's seen it by now. I mean, he had a terrible body composition. He couldn't run. He looked slow. It's like everything about him physically, as far as measurables were concerned or by analytics standards, was he would be a subpar backup quarterback. But what happened? Yep. He worked hard, and now he's the best quarterback in the game. See, that's stuff that analytics cannot measure. They don't measure the intensity or the intangible. And not to say that talent isn't everything, because you need to have talent, you need to have ability. But, I mean, the reality of it is that you need actually somebody who has a desire to be better. And sometimes that is, and on an analytics scale, that's not going to show up. So.
No, it's not.
That's typically what I say. I'm more or less. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just the whole analytics. It's gonna come to a point where they're pretty much gonna ruin. They're gonna ruin careers of certain players because of since he jumps this high, that he could possibly get this many amount of rebounds. Hey, guess what? When I was playing, I have a 40 vertical leap. I'm close. I'm pretty much 5'10", 40-inch vertical leap. Guess what? That means nothing when I'm down there in the paint going in there trying to grab a rebound, because guess what? You're not going to jump that same height when you're down there banging, fighting for position. That's just not going to happen.
Look at Kevin Durant. He barely could lift 100 pounds during the combine when he was coming in. So if you go by your analytics, we wouldn't have the MVP superstar that we've had in Kevin Durant now.
Hello, Lou, you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
What you call it? We're having the same issues, these technical difficulties. I got to cut out, basically, it dropped. We lost connection. But I know we see pretty much eye to eye on this whole thing with analytics. And you know, I think it has a place in sports. You just can't put it on the top of the list. Okay, it needs to be somewhere around maybe fourth or fifth priority because it could be useful. Mm-hmm. But I'm taking talent, and I'm taking ability and intangible before I take analytics.
Yeah.
Okay,
the bigger issue.
It only gets you so far.
Yeah, it only gets you so far. But really, right now, the bigger issue, the combine, this draft, and everything, it's really not going to mean nothing. The bigger issue is now with, you know, the college game because. It's too far behind from the NBA now. It's way too far behind. Everybody's playing at a quicker, faster pace. College is still playing like walking speed. It's like you're taking a guy training to go into a power walk competition, but you're really putting him into a sprint race. You know, it's too night and day. They need to fix the college game so it's better, so you can get better efficiency from these guys because it's not working the way it is.
It's not. And, you know, Lou, I tell you, we can talk about this forever. We got to get into it because of technical difficulties. It screwed us. But we appreciate everybody. That's your man, Lou Matic. I'm your man, Marlon the Magician. And we will be back come Sunday at 8 o'clock, same time, same crime. And we're going to leave with beautiful music. Lou, peace.